This is Tell Me More, the Sunday magazine on 101.1 More FM, WBEB Philadelphia. I'm Emily Scheibert. Good morning. This week, why one South Jersey teacher walks all night to fight suicide. In this edition of Tell Me More, the overnight Out of the Darkness Walk benefiting the American Foundation for Suicide Prevention takes place in Philadelphia June 16th. Suicide is the last great health issue of our time. In 2016, there were 45,000 reported suicide deaths in the U.S. Every day, about 123 Americans take their own lives, more lives than war, murder, and natural disasters combined. And yet, suicide prevention does not receive anywhere near the funding given to other leading causes of death. For families, along with the grief surrounding sudden death, they must deal with feelings of guilt, shame, and rejection, along with the stigma of suicide, which is very real. But for one night, thousands of people will save thousands of lives. For those touched by suicide, the overnight can be instrumental in their healing. The overnight is a way to honor their loved ones by giving them a chance to spare other families from this tragic loss. For Jim Cummings, a middle school teacher from Marlton, New Jersey, the overnight will be an opportunity to remember his daughter, Danny. He and his family have found the walk to be challenging, uplifting, and powerful, but it started almost 5 years ago with one tragic day. It's one of those topics that's a forbidden topic, and we can discuss that.
Yeah.
Because it's uncomfortable. It's hard, right?
Yes. So. Unfortunately, it is one of those topics that you just don't talk about. In a lot of communities, it's that way. It took me a little while to really open up about the story, but I can start from the beginning, if you want, from the very beginning.
Yeah.
My daughter, Danny, she was 21 years old. She was a student at the University of Delaware. And I guess it was at the end of her junior year. She kind of was having some mental health issues. Nothing that we thought was bad, but we sought a little bit of help for her. That summer of 2013 is when she went through counseling. She was in an outpatient and getting help. So when school came around in September, we were kind of iffy whether or not to send her back or not. We didn't know if she was ready or not, but she claimed that she was. So we supported her. She was an adult. So we sent her back to school. But at the end of the fall semester, that's when Danny died by suicide, December 13th of 2014. It was a day that I will always remember because I went to pick up my youngest daughter from college up at Marist, New York. And driving home, my wife was texting my daughter saying she couldn't get a hold of Danny, couldn't get a hold of Danny. So when she got home from work, and she's also a teacher, she went down to Delaware to see if she could find Danny. And she was down there for a few hours, and no one saw Danny. But eventually the police found her vehicle. She had rented a room at one of the hotels down there, and that's where she died. And she called myself and my daughter, come down as soon as you can. And as soon as we got down there, I could tell there was something wrong. And that's when my wife came out and said that they had found Danny, and she had passed. And it's something that I guess you'll never forget, that feeling, especially you have your child, because that's not the way it's supposed to happen.
No.
You know, parents are always supposed to outlive your children. So it was very heart-wrenching at the time, very emotional. But thankfully, we have a very strong family. We have a very strong community of friends, and our school communities really stepped up to help us through that time, and that helped a lot. And so whenever we get a chance to do anything, especially myself for the ASFP, they've been supportive through these walks, through just conversations with different people from the organization. It has helped a lot. So that's pretty much that part of the story, how it is. It's still very emotional. It's only been – this will be 5 years this December. But I've learned that through my story, I've helped a lot of people also with their struggles, either with mental health. A lot of students who know my story have come to me who have been struggling over the past few years. So that's me putting my story out there has helped a lot of people get through their issues also. So as you know, as long as I stay healthy and I can walk and I can talk, I'll be telling my story to help people out.
I'm sure one of the things that family does in a situation like this where someone has taken their own life is going back to see, did I miss something? Was there some red flag that would have told me that she might be capable of this or this depressed? Is that the process that you go through as a family member?
Yeah, to this day, still. Just the other night I was thinking, maybe, you know, was there something that we could have done? Danny was very she was a type of friend that everybody just clung to because she brightened everybody's day. She had a smile for everybody. If one of her friends were down, Danny was the one to pick them up. But, you know, no one really knew that Danny was suffering that much inside. And she did a great job of hiding it from people, especially from her parents. You know, because we were both teachers. We were both pushing the education part. You know, it's very important. Let's finish college. Let's make sure we do all that. So in hindsight, there's always something. You always look back. Is there something that I missed? Or did I push a little bit too much in this direction? Was I trying to push her into a mold that she really didn't want to be in? So that's something that always just runs through my mind. And I know my wife struggles with that too sometimes. Is there something that we missed? Because we tried to get her the help. She went through the counseling. But was there something else that was there? And we really didn't know her pain because she really didn't open up a lot to us. So we really didn't know the extent of the pain that she was going through. And that always runs through our minds.
I presume that unless you've experienced a depression that deep where death is the only way out that you can see, you can't really understand how somebody could be led to do that, somebody who was part of a loving family. So it's one of those incomprehensible events that occurs, the tragedies that occur.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, it's something that I will wish on nobody because it is just – it is painful. And the pain never goes away. A lot of people say, oh, with time, things will get better. It doesn't get better. You just learn to deal with it in a little different way. Every family member kind of goes through something different and they handle it in a different way. But it is something that is always on the back of your mind. You know, was there something? And like I said, growing up, she lived a very happy life. She was really into Harry Potter and, I mean, just everything about her. When she walked in the room, she was the brightness that lit up the room. And so you wouldn't think that somebody like that was suffering so much inside. But she did. And she did leave us a note. And in the note, she talked about that darkness that was inside of her that she just couldn't escape. Even though on the outside, she looked cheery and bright and smiling, dimples. She's just a beautiful girl. But on the inside, she was just in a space where I guess she couldn't take it anymore. And that was her only way that she thought she can, you know, escape that depression. And unfortunately, it ended up in a suicide.
To get away from that pain. And how many times a day does somebody say, how are you? And if you're in that kind of a state, if you're really down, it's very, very difficult to know, is this a safe place to say I'm not okay? And most of the time it's not. I mean, people ask how you are, but they don't really mean it.
Yeah, exactly. And I think my role as a teacher I think with the kids growing up, especially with everything that children nowadays are exposed to, I hope to be that one person that they can open up to. Actually, I know I am, because there have been a few students who have written emails to me, you know, crying for help, that I have gotten them help. So, you know, like I said, I just want to be that person that can help, you know, going forward, learning from this episode, you know, from my pain. Hopefully I can save other people from experiencing that same pain.
In the aftermath of your daughter's passing, how were people toward you? Were people able to express what they were feeling? It seems an overwhelming loss, so I don't know, frankly, what I would say to somebody suffering like that. Were people able to express themselves? What would have been helpful to you? What was the most helpful thing that was said to you in those times, those weeks just after?
I don't think there was anything, one thing that people said. Just knowing that their support and their love is there. Sometimes the best words are no words. You know, just giving a hug and just being understanding. And like I said, we have a very strong community of friends that they all came out and expressed their condolences. And sometimes they didn't know what to say, so they would just give you a hug. And that spoke millions of words for us. Just knowing that their love for us and for our family and our daughter was there, that helped tremendously.
Yeah. They always talk about anger being part of the grieving process. Do you feel that the anger piece for you was ramped up due to the fact that there was a suicide?
If there was anger, yeah, it was that possibly that she passed the way that she did. But I try to look at it from a point of understanding. Try to understand where she was at, you know, her head was at that time, and trying to feel that way. So I guess that really helped with appeasing that anger feeling that people have. So I really didn't go through that stage. And I don't know if, you know, someone listening saying, well, you can't, you know, really get over grieving unless you go through all these stages. But that anger piece just really never was there. Because I just wanted to feel for my daughter. I wanted to be there for my family. So I couldn't let that really enter into anything that I did.
Well, that's good to hear. You have to forgive yourself, and you have to forgive the loved one that you've lost, and all of those things come into play. Did becoming a volunteer for the overnight, did that help you to find a path toward giving back and toward healing and trying to make some sense out of this by being part of a community that would understand your experience?
Definitely. We did our first walk was here in Philadelphia back in 2014, just 6 months after her passing. We heard about it on the radio, and one of our good family friends called up and said, hey, let's do the walk. And we decided, okay, let's do the walk. So we raised the money, and ever since then, we've been Philadelphia, Boston, New York, Washington, D.C. Now we're back here in Philly raising money, because mental health issues are definitely underfunded. I think everyone would agree on that. So any way that we could do that, that helps a lot. And also just there's community walks. There's a lot of campus walks that the organization has too, that we try to just make a presence to. That way you can just kind of talk with everybody. You know, people have a story that is very similar to yours. So you share, and that definitely helps. And that very first walk, just seeing all the people that were going through the same thing that we were going through, you know, and it was only 6 months since her passing, but the love and the camaraderie that you felt during that walk, it was great. It helped a lot with our whole family. It helped our whole family come even tighter, and this is something that we want to continue to do.
The experience of walking at night is something unique, and it's something that I think points out how dark the area of mental health is, how little spoken of, how underfunded and underrecognized. We all know somebody, if we haven't struggled ourselves, we know someone who has. And yet a lot of these topics are kind of off the table and not spoken of as much as they should, not recognized. So the walking at night piece, I think, is a really interesting thing. Did you find it meaningful? Was there sort of a reverence about the overnight concept for you?
Yeah, I think so, because, you know, walking through the night and then finishing at daybreak, you know, you're coming into that light. I think that was the whole idea of the walk. It felt really good knowing that, you know, we were there with a lot of people. We all had something in common. We're walking through the night. And it's very interesting to see the cities, different cities at night, too. But just going there and then in the morning, daybreak, you know, that's when it's over and it's coming out into the light. And hopefully through more advertisement and more acknowledgement of this, more people will be coming into the light. And this is a topic that people will be able to speak about more freely or more comfortably, because you bring it up and you can just see people kind of cringe and want to walk away. Let's talk about it. Let's bring it out into the light so that we can help a lot more people. Because like you mentioned before, you never know who's suffering. You say, how are you doing? They can smile, but inside, you know, they're hurting really bad. But if this was a topic that was easily discussed, bringing it out into the light, it would help a lot more people than we're helping right now.
How's your daughter doing? Has this been a journey for her as well?
Yeah, it really has. She was really devastated. Only had the two daughters, and this was her first semester freshman year that had happened. But she has also been an advocate for the AFSP. She participated in the bead ceremony that very first year in Philadelphia.
And what is that? Explain that.
The honor bead ceremony is during the walk, there are different colored beads that represent your different losses. My wife and I wear white beads because that's the loss of a child. Orange beads are loss of a sibling. And they bring people up on stage before the walk begins during the opening ceremonies to tell their story and who are they honoring for that walk. So she was very fortunate to be able to be in that very – our first walk, be on stage to honor Danny in the honor bead ceremony. She played soccer at Marist. She organized the girls up at her school where they did a campus walk up there. So she's continually involved in, you know, in doing, bringing this whole topic out to light. And my wife and I were fortunate enough last year in Washington, D.C. to actually be part of the bead ceremony also. So it really helps because people see you, hear your story. And there was another couple that their daughter, my daughter's birthday was June 17th, and that was the day of the walk last year, who came up. They had a daughter, Danny, whose birthday was June 17th, who died by suicide also. And they came up, and they told us their story, lots of hugs and support there. And it just allows people to open up and talk a little bit more. But going back to Devin is my daughter. Yeah, she's in the forefront. She's the leader of our team that walks. She organizes the T-shirts, designs our team T-shirts, puts the team up on the website, and she gets it out there that we're continuing to do this walk.
The mission of the organization is suicide prevention, and as a teacher in a middle school, you're there amongst a lot of young people. Do you find yourself looking for and seeing red flags, kind of seeing kids who might be more troubled and in need of some intervention?
Yeah, fortunately for me, in my school, where the kids are, they come to us. So there were a lot of students who have, you know, struggled, who have mentioned things to teachers. But being a teacher, you can kind of spot certain students that are struggling if you know a little bit about their background, what they're going through. And you tend to – well, I tend to kind of gravitate towards them to get to know them and to see if they need help, to try to get them the help that they need through the counseling department of our school. So – but – again, a lot of the kids know my story, so they come to me when they need help. And they know that I'm someone that will keep it confidential for them. However, I do share it with our counselors because that's – you have to do
the
that.
The state law.
yeah, you have to do that. And they understand it. And I think that they come to me knowing that that's where I have to go. And seeing it in a middle school, you're seeing more and more students that are struggling and that do need a little assistance. So, we definitely try to help as many as we can.
What hope do you see? You have been working with this cause for a few years now, and obviously every year you bring something new away from the overnight. But are you hopeful for the future, and where do you think this movement is going?
I'm very hopeful because they do have a goal of reducing deaths by suicides by a certain percentage in a certain year. I'm hoping that, that can be achieved. Also hoping that this whole mental illness is put out there more so people are more comfortable talking about it. People are comfortable seeking help. Because I know there's still that stigma that if someone thinks that you have something wrong with you, mentally wrong with you, that you're crazy, quote unquote, or, that there's something seriously wrong with you. So people keep that into themselves and they don't seek the help that they need. So I'm hoping through all this that people will open up and they will seek the help when they feel that something's not right, that they do seek the help that that they need to be able to cope with these issues.
Yeah. A very close friend of mine was in a very deep depression a few years back, and I honestly did not think she was going to come out of it. That's how bad it looked from the outside. I couldn't imagine her turning around in a really remarkable way, and yet that's what's happened.
That's wonderful.
Yeah. She's gone from not being able to work and not being able really to function in her life. And through talk therapy and a combination of medications and evaluations by various medical professionals, she has miraculously turned her life around. She's not just working, but working at a very high level now. And she has a good life. And I'm astonished. I'm really kind of, I didn't realize that you could be that sick with a mental illness and come back kind of to yourself or even better than you were before all that started. But I've seen it close up. So
yeah, that's wonderful.
It is possible. And I presume that's the message that you are taking out there, trying to get people to allow someone to help them.
Oh, definitely. And through the AFSP, too, with the money that they're putting into research, hopefully, we could find a cause, what's causing the depression and then attack it from there. But that's great. And people have. You meet people on the walk that have been through serious depression, had suicidal ideations. But yet they've gone out. They sought out the help. They've gotten help. And like you said, through therapy, through medication, they're living very productive lives right now. And that's what we want to happen. That's what we want people to know, that there is help out there. You can get help. You're not alone out there. Find someone you can open up to and seek out the help, because you can get the help, you can get better, and you can lead a very productive life. And that's definitely a message that a lot of people need to hear.
Another miracle we could look at is the fact that your family has stayed together, that you've pulled together, worked together, volunteered together. Not all families are able to overcome a tragedy like a suicide in the family.
No. Even knowing some, there's some other families that have gone through what we've gone through, and we saw how they stuck together and how keeping together has helped them very much. So we've always been a very tight family. Not only my immediate family, but my extended family too, my siblings, my wife's siblings. We've just really come together as a family. And without that support, I don't think I could be where I am now, the place where I am now. I don't know if I would have been able to deal with the whole situation as well as I have. I don't think my wife or my daughter would be in their station in life that they're in right now without that support of each other and our extended family and friends.
One of the first questions I presume you ask is why? Why my family? Why my child? Have you come to peace with that? Has your faith played a part in your process?
I don't know if I've come to terms with it yet, because it's still, you wake up and sometimes you want to hear her voice. You know, you want to see the smile. It still is a deep cut that I know it's going to take my lifetime to heal. But as long as her memory is there, and, you know, that's what keeps me going, knowing that she was my daughter. We had her for 21 beautiful years. She was a very beautiful girl. And she keeps me motivated that I have to keep doing what I'm doing to help other people. So as long as the memories in my heart, I will be out there, you know, helping people whenever I can.
Where does the overnight begin and end in this area, and how would people find out more information about it?
They can go to the AFSP Overnight Walk. They have a Facebook page, and they also have a web page. Here in Philadelphia, the walk starts at the Art Museum and travels throughout Philadelphia for about 16 to 17 miles. It's a long walk, and it takes you overnight to complete it. And it ends back at the Art Museum. So they have an opening ceremony and a closing ceremony at the Art Museum. Beautiful. They have luminaries that people decorate bags. And then when you come back, like when we did it in 2014, they took all those luminaries and they made a big heart on the steps of the Art Museum. It was just a very welcoming, heartfelt sight to see when you came back in. And along the way, there's different rest stops along the way. And they actually have places where you can volunteer to be like a cheering section on different street corners. As the walkers come by, you can cheer them on. Because 16, 17 miles in one night, that's a heavy physical activity to do.
Are you training? What do you do to get ready for this?
That's a good question. we try to walk as much as we can. I really haven't started my training yet. But my wife and I will usually walk 2-3 miles a night after work just to get us used to the walk. And then when it comes up, we got to do it, and we just go out and do it. But, yeah, I would suggest that people train. Definitely, because 17 miles is a long way to walk, especially if you need a good pair of shoes and lots of change of socks.
Very good. Well, Jim Cummings, thank you so much for bringing your story here. It's been inspiring meeting you and just seeing the hopefulness that you have and the love that you've shared that your family and your community has brought to you. And you bringing it here today has been a pleasure. Thank you so much.
Yeah, thank you very much for having me. Thank you.
Jim Cummings of Marlton, New Jersey, one of thousands of people across the country who will be taking part in the Overnight, a 16-mile walk for the American Foundation for Suicide Prevention. It will take place in Philadelphia June 16th. For more information, please visit theovernight.org. Thanks for joining me this morning. You can email the show or browse the archive. Just log on to morefmphilly.com and click on Tell Me More. For 101.1 More FM, I'm Emily Shivert.